11. Zahariel in the Mountain. Zahariel hears a whisper. It makes him pause in his work. He rises and he listens. It is only the wind soaring through the mountain's deep amplifier vaults, but for a moment, it sounded like someone saying his name. Nothing. A distraction. The hollowness of the place soaks up sound and spits it back out at different angles. He looks around for Carthaeus, Tandarion, and Azradale, but they are in adjoining chambers, hard at work. Already, in mere hours, the four of them have reconstructed part of the sacred mountain's psionic lattice, reweaving the etheric filaments where they were burned out and torn by demonic excess. But it is hard toil. Painstaking, and it quickly exhausts the mind. He knows why. The mountain has forever been a place of acute sensitivity, and now, as chaogenous power saturates the whole world, it is worn away raw. As he composes and configures the talismanic engrams, one misstep, one lapse in mental defense could split his soul open. It makes him feel vulnerable and weak, and neither feeling suits him. It is like feeding a feral beast through the bars of a cage, knowing that the beast would rather feast upon him than the meat he proffers. He has guarded himself. He has marked his armor with hexagrammatic wards and taught his three brothers to do the same. The shamans of old did not come here to mark figures on the walls. Sympathetic magic was not about composing an image of some desired future. It was about making the future present. They knew the rock was just a membrane, not solid at all, but a veil, on which the etheric world was projected. The images of hunters and hunted were just tracings of things on the other side. Zahariel has learned this from the ghosts of the shamans that drift around him in the darkness. He tries to stay alert and focus. There is still too much to be done, and just days before the enemy arrives. At the very darkest recess of his mind is a thought he doesn't want to acknowledge, that he will not share with anyone, not Carthaeus or Tandarion or Azradale, not even with himself. He is susceptible. A part of him wants to submit and allow the warp in, not just the warp, but those who move through it, those who have themselves submitted, and he catches his breath.
Cunning. He says to nothing. Oh, that's cunning.
It nearly had him. He nearly let down his guard. Something is trying to reach at him, to prise into his head, something that can sense him, something that is using the resonance of the mountain to show him some kind of sign. He has set his sword down while he works, but he goes to it, lifts it, and draws it. He thinks it's still here, watching him. He is sure he knows who it is. The old enemy. He studies the walls with their flickering seams of cryocyte and quartz. He almost expects Typhus to loom from the shadows, hands extended to greet him. Typhus, so deeply drenched in the warp, has always known the secret, agnostic leanings of the Order hidden in the Dark Angel's heart. This is his guile at work. An effort to turn those he thinks might stand with him. This is his way of infecting minds and cracking them from within.
"Hell take you and your nightmares, Death Guard," he says out loud. "You cannot tempt us so. When you come, we will be ready, staunch and fresh upon the high cliffs while you crawl in the dirt at our feet."
The lights in the rock throb, describing promises of truths and secret powers and deathless majesty. His blade shakes in his hand. He hears a buzzing in his ears. He yearns to know more. He raises his hand, palm out, the warding gesture.
"I abjure you!"
he cries. The lights sparkling across the face of the wall go out. The membrane goes cold. The buzzing stops. He is left alone in the cold depths of the mountain. The intruding presence has gone, and he has no idea what thought, what whisper, what mystic sign fortified him against it. The lights slowly return, pulsing dimly in the crystal traceries. They show the truth now, no longer twisted by temptation and deceit. The future writ. It is not the same future he read just hours before. What he sees is barely credible. Zahariel turns and runs into the adjoining chamber. His footfalls echo and bounce in the stone gullet of the mountain. He finds Carthaeus first. Carthaeus is kneeling in deep contemplation, repairing a psionic engram that fizzles in the air in front of him. Zahariel grabs him and hauls him to his feet, breaking his intense focus. The delicate engram shatters like glass. Carthaeus, dazed, starts to protest. There isn't time for words. There isn't time for anything. Zahariel clamps his hand across the right side of Carthaeus's head and communicates directly by will. Carthaeus gasps, staggers back a few steps, and then turns, without further word or question, and rushes away to carry the warning. Zahariel sinks to his knees where his brother was kneeling. He breathes hard. Blood is singing in his neck, his throat, his temples. He reaches for the satchel under his robe. He pulls out the mask. There isn't time. There isn't time for anything. Except this.